Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current Online. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
And good Saturday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in to catch our drift. Joining me in studio, chewing his cud, Brandon Drake. You can mumble, dude.
I talk more, but I'm still chewing.
I don't even want to know what it is that you're eating. All right, well, it's good to be back. Thanks for tuning in to catch our drift. And let's take over a little business and get that out of the way while Brandon's finishing masticating that sandwich or whatever it is that you're eating there.
Yeah, I'm over here masticating.
Sandwich, donut. All right, let's take care of our sponsor this half hour, Regal Recycling. In Whitmore Lake and Howell, if your winter's here and if you're looking to put a pair of winter tires on or upgrade your batteries or alternators or starters, make sure you get hold of Regal Recycling. You can call them at 734-663-0976, and they're also located at 6270 Whitmore Lake Road as well in Whitmore Lake. So if you need auto parts or new or used auto parts, sometimes they're cheaper, so that's the way to go. So give them a holler, 734-663-0976. And they buy all kinds of scrap metal. So those of you who are scrappers or want to clean out the garage and you got a bunch of metal to get rid of, give them a call, 734-663-0976.
You're the master of the live read. You do such a good job with that.
After 4 years, you think I'd be able to do something right.
I'm going to adjust my microphone, so I apologize. I wasn't set up before the show. Here we go. Plug your ears, everybody. It's going to make a twang.
You got it all going on.
There we go.
There you go. See? Yeah. You know, we do everything live down here. Yeah, it's real. We do here is real, isn't it?
I mean, as an Italian maniac might say, what you want from me?
All right, look at Derek over there. There you go. Okay, anyways, we've got quite a bit to cover today, but we're going to start with, you know, 2 weeks ago when we last were together before the Christmas break, and you did last week's show. You did a good job, by the way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I was going to call him, but you were on a roll, man. I'm like, let go, brother. Just knock it out. I'm sure your blood pressure was pretty high at the end of that show.
I heard of rock and roll. I was rant and roll, and Pastor Sean Todd was on with me, so thanks very much to him. He did a great job. He's got a great show, by the way.
He does.
Sundays at noon.
He's got a great voice for it, too. Mm-hmm. So, well, anyways, 2 weeks back, we've been giving the Republicans a little bit of grief because of the omnibus bill. And one of our listeners, Ed from Ipsy, even said, Gary, you're not being fair. Well, you know what? I am the really fair guy. Nobody can ever. I'm not, maybe not balanced, but I'm certainly fair. And, my good friend and a guy that I support 99% of the time, 95 anyways, 7th District Congressman Tim Walberg said he would call in and spend a lot of time with me yesterday on the phone and explained and cleared up a bunch of things for me that kind of made a little more sense. And so Tim's going to spend a good chunk of today's show explaining the omnibus, and then we'll get into the other stuff as well. So Congressman Tim, welcome to the show.
It's good to be with you, and I wish I could have been with you a week ago.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Tim? We always love the fact that you're willing to come on and stand up and explain your process, your thought process when you vote on these things, and you kind of opened my eyes a little bit yesterday. So, you know, let's go through this because it's not just you. I'm sure Speaker Ryan's been getting a lot of grief, and a lot of Republicans that voted for this omnibus bill have been getting grief. And so let's try and clear up some of the misconceptions as well. So why don't we start with some of those? Some of the things that people accuse this omnibus bill of being, but they really aren't.
Well, I appreciate that opportunity, and it is an issue that is of utmost importance to this country and to the citizens of this country, the taxpayers of this country, but I think even more so to the conservatives of this country, because we're frustrated, we're angry, to say the least, and we're fearful that we may be at the dropping off point of a cliff of no return, and we don't want that. We want America to get back to its greatness, and these past 7 years, now going to the eighth year of this Obama administration, has been abominable. It has changed the makeup of the world, really, in understanding that America that has always been strong, that has always been brave, that has always been straightforward, and oh, by the way, it's always paid its bills, and that's changed. So this was an issue with the omnibus. It was an end-of-the-year issue because, frankly, as it's gone on for 7 years now, the Democrats have been unwilling to pass a budget. I mean that by saying that in the House for the past 5 years, we've sent them over there's 12 appropriations bills, and if you kill one of those bills, it doesn't shut down the full government, it just shuts down some of the government. If you can't get four of the bills of the 12, it doesn't shut down the full government, and that's the experience you had back in 94 when Newt Gingrich was Speaker, and you couldn't come to an agreement with Clinton at the time, and there was a shutdown, but it wasn't a total shutdown. This president has been all too willing to have a full shutdown in order to push his way forward, and unwilling to have a budget passed. So for 7 years now, there's been no budget passed. It's all been by continuing resolutions, otherwise known as CRs, or omnibuses, or cromnibuses. Anyway, end of the year, massive one spending bill, all those 12 budget areas put into one. And that's what we came to here at the end of this year, after several continuing resolutions, because we couldn't get the Senate to debate the bill because Harry Reid would pull a filibuster.
So, Tim, let me ask you. So instead of whenever these 12 appropriations, we can't do them individually because the Senate has been filibustering them to prevent you from doing one appropriation at a time?
Yeah, that's the case. We've sent the bills over. We've done the full debate in the House, in the committees, first of all, Appropriations Committee, and then it comes to the floor, and there are amendment opportunities, and we've had the privilege this last year especially of having regular order, and it's meant a lot of long hours and nights on the floor. I've offered amendments. I've had a number of them adopted to either remove funding or to establish a different priority, and that's the way it ought to go, and then we take a vote. And most of those appropriations bills were passed with bipartisan agreement. More Republicans, of course, than Democrats, but we did have Democrat support. It went over to Senate, and that's where they died, because the filibuster took place, and you can't bring in the rules of the Senate, you can't bring a bill up for a vote or even a debate until you have 60 votes to do that. The Republicans have 54 in their majority, but not 60.
Okay, so the budget process has been stifled, just like those, what did you say last time, 350 or 400 bills that were passed in the House. They go to the Senate and they die in the Senate because even though we've got now a Republican majority, there's still not enough to override that yeah. filibuster.
Yeah, at the beginning of December, for the year up to that time, we had passed in the House 300 bills. The Senate had passed or sent back 20. And a number of those bills, of course, as we were ridiculed, were bills that repealed all or portions of Obamacare, that dealt with fully funding our military efforts on the ground and military families and veterans, et cetera. And so that's the frustration. There are many people say, well, why don't you pull the nuclear option? Well, that's up to the Senate to do that. And even people like Ted Cruz have said, no, we don't want to alter the filibuster rule because we've used it probably more effectively than Democrats when we've had the opportunity. Well, my concern is that that may be the case, and you may want that deliberative body approach, but when you get down to appropriations, we have to pass a budget. That's our responsibility. That's how you fund government. That's how you set priorities. That's how you balance the budget ultimately. So what we're going to be suggesting strongly this next week, and we've already sent a resolution over the Senate, the Senate will be with us, the Republican Senate will be with us at our annual conference retreat. And what we're going to suggest then is do what you must on the other issues of filibuster, but on the appropriations issues. When it gets to September and we have 1 month to complete the budget and the filibuster's been going on all year until then, it's time to change the rules so that at that point you are required to take up the bills for a vote with a simple 51 vote margin. And I think that would go a long way to still allowing that deliberative body to be deliberative, but still do the job it must do. So we'll see what happens there. But getting back to the omnibus, we came to the end of the year. As you know, in December, a budget level was set the last action of our former speaker. As you know, I oppose that because it bumped us up a bit above our Ryan Murray plan of 2011 that had kept us at the level of spending of 2011 or less since that time and was moving us toward a balanced budget by 2021, 10-year plan. And that was good, but this bumped it up, voted against it, but that established the level that we were working with. So we came to the end of the year, and we had three options. And this is what I did in my deliberation that we really actually went to the night before the vote, late night, of saying, how am I going to vote? What choice do I have? The omnibus had a lot of bad stuff in it, ugly stuff that I wouldn't want. Of course, any appropriations bill is going to have some things that aren't exactly to my taste, and likewise from other members, 434 members of the House. But it came down to saying, take the omnibus with the riders that we were successful in negotiating, things like lifting for the first time, an effort that's gone on for 40 years, the export oil export ban, setting in place reforms for the IRS to keep them from targeting conservative groups like Lois Lerner did, to make Guantanamo Bay a setting that the president couldn't take the detainees and move them to the United States, deal with the visa waiver program that we've been looking for to make sure that any refugees now or in the future that would come to the United States could not come to us if they'd been to a terrorist promoting nation within the past 5 years. They'd have to go through the full vetting process and not simply the visa waiver program that the country they were in would go through, and I could go on more and more. Plus, making permanent multiple tax extenders, like small business has been looking for, individuals, the 179, which is the depreciation bill. We got that made permanent. IRA rollover for individuals, research and development tax credit, etc. Things that George W. Bush attempted to get through, but we can only get those into a partial or temporary status. This became permanent. And so it came down to that, or accepting a short-term CR, which would have all of the bad stuff in it, basically, and none of this good stuff, or just simply holding out for a shutdown of government. That's one thing, Gary and I, you and I have talked about, that a lot of people don't understand. Under our budgeting system, with its baseline, and even just this past week in conference, Paul Ryan said, we have to get away from baseline budgeting and get to a zero-based budget. But until we do, if there's a shutdown, people don't understand that the power of the purse is gone then from where it ought to be, and that's the House, and it goes to the president, because then he takes and decides which bills he's going to pay and which project he's going to fund. And that could be anything liberal. That could be the IRS. That could be Planned Parenthood. That could be you name it. He gains the power under a shutdown because the dollars are there that have been appropriated already and not spent, and he has the ability to spend them.
Okay. Let's touch on something right there, too, Tim. You talked about Planned Parenthood. A lot of people said you guys went ahead and funded Planned Parenthood, and I know I was confused as well. Do you want to clear that one up for us, the Planned Parenthood funding?
Because there's a lot of chatter out there that was misguided and inaccurate. No, I mean, I would challenge any of your listeners to go to that almost 2,000-page bill and with a party looking through it, say a group of people looking through it together, find me where there was any funding specifically for Planned Parenthood. And I'll tell you the answer, no, there wasn't. And that's why all of the pro-life groups did not oppose this omnibus. In fact, they were supportive. Because, number one, they did not want anything that would make it more difficult to get a Republican president, a pro-life president, this next time around. And the president knows that if he can get us in a setting where he's controlling the tables and we continue to have controversy with CRs, et cetera, or a shutdown, it makes it more difficult for people to perceive that the Republicans know how to govern, and why should we give them the president's opportunity? That's why the pro-life groups supported it and did not oppose it. They also knew there was no funding in for Planned Parenthood. Where the funding for Planned Parenthood or any other organization that wants to access funds comes from is in Title X funding. and that goes for special social service purposes. And so Planned Parenthood or even some pro-life group could access funds from Title X if they meet the requirements. And none of those dollars can be used for abortion. The Hyde Amendment is still in place and was part of this omnibus, along with multiple other pro-life riders that were put in. In fact, it was the most pro-life budget bill that we've ever had in the history of the United States. But that was lost when people were hearing that we were not defunding Planned Parenthood. Well, we weren't defunding by actual language, but we weren't funding them either. Beyond that, the strategy was to make sure that we did have an opportunity that not only was in a bill that would have ultimately killed this bill if we'd had it in there, because the Senate would have filibustered it. Rather than doing that, our plan was to put that in the reconciliation bill, which your listeners probably are fully aware of, that can be used once a year. It can only be used when we've actually passed a budget plan. And we did that for the first time because we had a Senate majority. So we could pass that budget plan, and then we could go through reconciliation, which has some very strict rules. But nonetheless, we decided that we would do two things in the reconciliation bill. So we could get it to the president's desk with 51 votes, not 60, but 51. And that was to defund Planned Parenthood and remove their funding, plus add increased funding to go to federally qualified health care centers that truly deal with women's health issues, including mammograms, et cetera, cancer screenings, you name it, that Planned Parenthood doesn't do because they're just an abortion mill, and put that in the reconciliation bill, and then also put in a basic full repealer of Obamacare. Those two items were put in that reconciliation bill. Now, you and I, as we talked yesterday, there's nobody in their right mind or with common sense that believed that the president would sign that bill. Rather, he would veto it, which he's done. And he didn't read it until you even find out what's in it. But we knew that would be the case. But America now knows that if we have a president who's willing to work as normal presidents, whether it's Reagan or Clinton, work with Congress, and in the end, say, okay, send me the bills. I'll decide what I do with them. But don't just filibuster and hold them back. Use the process. If we have a president elected next time that will sign a repealer for Obamacare, will sign a defunder for organizations like Planned Parenthood that sell baby parts, we will not need 60 votes to get it to him or her. We'll just need the 51 from the Senate, 218 from the House, and the president will sign it. That shows that what could take place next time around if we elect, and let me state it very clearly, a Republican president, any of them, they will sign that repealer of Obamacare and the repealer of Planned Parenthood, plus a lot of other stuff we need to get done. So that was the strategy that was missed, and you and I also talked about the fact the Republicans have not been good at communicating beforehand as well as we should. I do 35 town halls, live town halls, this last year. I've communicated as best I can in my district. We've done it with teletown halls. We go on radio programs like this, but nobody listens to me as much as they listen to the Speaker of the House or Harry Reid or someone else like that. And I think we have to be more effective, and I'm glad to tell you right now that Paul Ryan is doing a much more effective job as the new Speaker in getting out all across the media and talking prior to our votes what we need to do, but we can still improve on that.
Yeah, I mean, it probably would have saved a lot of grief, you know, for many of our listeners and even for me, because I feel a little better, you know, knowing that it seems like there was an actual plan here other than just a complete what's the word I'm looking for, Brandon?
Capitulation.
Capitulation. Thank you. Blech, I can't get that out of my mouth. So I do feel a little bit better, Tim. I'm glad. But I wish we had had that a week or two before the bill so that we could have not had so many conservatives saying, oh, we've been screwed again, because that's the way I was feeling.
Yeah.
And that's the way I know a lot of our listeners and even readers at The Current were feeling. So let me clear up one other thing, too. I'm reading through here. So you got the visa waiver. They won't be able to, like all these refugees going into Europe, and normally we have visa waivers from France and England, right, and countries like that in Western
right.
Europe.
Australia, but if, whatever.
But if these refugees have come recently from Syria, Iraq, wherever, they're not going to be able to use that visa waiver program now.
No, if they've had any contact with a country that is a terrorist listed as a terrorist producing country, so if they've gone to Iran, they've gone to Iraq, they've gone to Afghanistan, they've gone to Libya, they've gone to Somalia, they've gone, and it could go down the list. They will not, even though they're in Germany or in Belgium, like those that committed the atrocities in Paris, they will not, simply because they're there or even citizens of that country, they will not be able to use the visa waiver but go through the entire vetting process. Now, let me hasten to add that when we passed legislation in the House overwhelmingly, and with, in fact, a veto-proof waiver that told the president to put on hold any refugees coming from Syria until such time as Director Comey of the FBI would put together a vetting plan that was agreed to by Homeland Security Secretary and the Director of Intelligence. Those three together all put their necks on the line and say, we have a vetting plan in place for these refugees that we believe is as close as possible to being foolproof. Until then, there was a pause to be put on Obamacare. That bill passed the House overwhelmingly, veto-proof majority, and it's in the Senate now. And under the agreement in the omnibus, Harry Reid also has committed the fact, and again, that's a guy that you got to trust but verify, but the agreement was made that he will not put a filibuster on that and allow the Senate to debate it. They will pass it then. It may not go to the president with a veto-proof waiver, but it'll explain to the president as clearly as we possibly can that the American people, with their representatives from the states and the local districts, have said, we're a compassionate nation. We know that there are refugees that are being hurt. But until such time as America is protected first, we want a pause put on until you can show us a vetting plan that will work and bring it to Congress, and we will decide upon it. So that was passed as well. Also, Gary, you bring up that. Let me just jump and say there was a lot of rhetoric out there that we had put money in for Syrian refugees in this omnibus, 10,000 people for specifically. No, there wasn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading right now. That was my question. It says what did not make it into the deal was any provision on acceptance of the Syrian refugees, so that's the good thing.
That's a good thing. We didn't put any. There was no increased funding. There was no increased numbers of refugees, Syrians included, that was put in the omnibus bill. And sadly, that was some rhetoric put out there. And some of these things, just like the fact that I have to serve one term in office and I get my pension at the level of my salary for the rest of my life. That's not true, you know, but it's a rumor that goes around. And some of these same things were put in place. So I hope that allays some of the concerns. Was the omnibus filled with some, as Paul Ryan said, a crap sandwich? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But that now is off the table. The president can't jerk us around for the rest of his term on that issue. We can now start the appropriations process, which has started as of this week, with the Appropriations Committee meeting in their subcommittees, each of the cardinals putting together the plan for their appropriations area, establishing our priorities. We'll be discussing more of that this week at the conference, our retreat, and moving forward with efficiency and the way it ought to be done according to the Constitution, with 12 appropriations bills passed one at a time, with the opportunity for American people to hear and read about it, with us debate on it, with us to amend it, and then send it to the Senate. And as of right now, publicly stated, Harry Reid has said he will allow that appropriations process to go through without a filibuster, unless, and this is where the caveat could be a problem.
Hey, Tim, are you going to stick with us after the break? Because I do have a couple of questions for you regarding national security, Syrian refugees, vetting, that type of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. Awesome. All right, Tim, hang tight. We'll be right back with Congressman from the 7th District, Tim Walberg. See you on the other side.
Wham! Talk 1600.
Hey, my blood brothers of freedom. This is Ted Nugent.
Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse.
God bless Ann Arbor and Wham! Radio. I started doing interviews on Wham! Radio around 1966. I celebrate and promote the God-given individual right as guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, for us to defend ourselves, to keep and bear arms. And just to make sure everyone understands what we the people understand, keep can only mean one thing. That's, it's mine and you can't have it.
Wham!
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. An investigation underway into possible terror ties for the man who confessed to ambushing a Pennsylvania police officer. Heard here calling for backup.
Shots fired! Get those police! I'm shot! I'm bleeding heavily!
All cars stand by. We have an officer shot.
Officer Jesse Hartnett said to be in critical but stable condition. Suspect Edward Archer telling police he did it in the name of Islam.
The Philadelphia Inquirer reporting that Archer's mother says her son had psychological issues and was speaking to himself recently. Archer's brother says he doesn't really think it's about the terrorist ties, but that he believes that his brother had issues with the way police mistreat African-American men.
Fox's Brian Yenis, and we're getting more details about the mother of the so-called affluenza teen. Officials say she took $30,000 from a bank account and cut ties with the boy's father before fleeing to Mexico with her son. Fox News, we report. You decide.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Arbor Woman is offering a season for healing starting January 12th. The feelings of loss, anger, isolation, and low self-esteem do not have to last a lifetime. There is help for healing. Contact an Arbor Woman post-abortion recovery counselor for a confidential consultation at 734-994-8863 extension 14 or email asff@arborwoman.com. A Season for Healing is a 9-week small group Bible study designed to help women break free of the guilt and grief of abortion. The next group will begin on Tuesday, January 12th. This program is free, sponsored by Arbor Woman Pregnancy Center. Cry to the Lord with One Voice annual concert of prayer for unity and life will take place Wednesday, January 20th at 7:30 p.m. at Cross and Resurrection Lutheran Church, 812 Ann Street in Ypsilanti. It'll be an evening of praise and prayer for unity among Christians, racial reconciliation, pro-life concern, spread of the gospel in our country. Christians from all churches are invited to join together to cry out with one voice to our Lord Jesus for his kingdom to come to Washtenaw County. Rolling Thunder, Inc., Chapter 5, Michigan, cordially invites you to their 2016 All-You-Can-Eat Spaghetti Dinner fundraising. It'll take place on Saturday, February 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. And note, you can order your spaghetti sauce with or without meat. Adults $8, seniors $6, and kids $4. It'll take place at the Livingston Masonic Lodge, number 76, 210 Mann Street in Pinckney. There will be live entertainment, a raffle, 50-50 drawings, all proceeds to help veterans. For more information, call 248-505-5953.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community@whamradio.com. You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to Catch Our Drift. Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
I'm no longer masticating.
Yes. And on the phone with us, Congressman, 7th District, Tim Walberg. Tim, thanks for calling in and clarifying today. And as Brandon said, Gary, are you going to eat some crow? I said, well, yes, I'm going to apologize for some of the clarify. Maybe I was not clear on something, but anyways, I stand corrected on probably at least two issues from that omnibus. So thank you, Tim, for coming on board and clarifying that. And I'll thank my good friend and neighbor, Ed from Ypsilanti, for correcting me. So I stand corrected, Ed, from 2 weeks back. So there you go. But, Tim, there was one other thing before we move on to the other issues here. How about executive amnesty? How did that fall out in the omnibus?
The executive amnesty has been pushed back on numerous occasions, including in the National Defense Authorization Act that the president has signed. Now, we know that the president is not encumbered with the law. He's willing to go outside of the law. He's willing to become the legislator as well as chief administrator. We've been effective not only in passing bills from the House and then putting language in the NDAA that the president actually signed. We've also got the courts that have stood on our side, gave us standing, and now in three separate court cases, they have blocked the president from his executive amnesty. And at this point in time, there is no amnesty going on, and there hasn't been. For a period of time, Gary, you may have been aware of it, they were quietly still behind the scenes not enforcing what the court said they must enforce. That meant finding illegals and exporting them, deporting them. And the judge in Texas became so incensed that he called the Assistant Secretary of State, he called the Attorney General, and he called the Director of Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security, in to his courtroom and tongue-lashed them, saying, "You will not violate my ruling. I have upheld the fact that you cannot have an executive amnesty for illegals, and that's what I expect to take place." So since that time, and to the third case, we've been winning. And I don't know whether the president will take it all the way to the Supreme Court, but thus far, the American people have been served by the intentions of the U.S. House, fighting in every way we can through legislation, being blocked in the Senate, but then going to the courts. And really, that's how it's supposed to work ultimately. And then, if the courts and the legislature, et cetera, don't work for you, then it comes down to the people. And that's where the vote at the ballot box is the final check and balance. And we, the people, have to be more careful in what we do. We cannot suffer another president like this president for four more years, or certainly eight more years. I'm not sure this grand and wonderful country is strong enough to take that.
Yeah, yeah. Brandon, you had some questions.
I do. Regarding the vetting of Syrian refugees, Iraqi refugees, anybody from that area, Pakistan even, these Muslim countries that have a clear and present danger of terrorism, and a lot of times they play both sides of the fence. They sponsor the terrorists, yet they're dealing with us as if they're not. We all know that. We all know the real world. My point is this. When we use the word vetting, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that we can truly vet anybody from these areas, especially with all the ways they have of getting fake passports, that type of thing. I wanted your thoughts on that. But also, a two-part question. I'm going to take myself, for example. If I suddenly got a plane ticket and headed to Pakistan and traveled around and hung out there for no clear reason, then went to Saudi Arabia, hung out there for a while and came back, I would hope that our national security, our intelligence services, our law enforcement agencies would be all over my butt. I would hope they would profile me, they would target me, they would check me out before I had a chance to do something, if in fact I was planning to do something. What are your thoughts on that? Should we divert a part of our resources to American citizens, I'm talking about, that suddenly, for no apparent reason, or maybe a clear reason, they have a business over there that they're dealing with. Shouldn't they still be checked out in today's world?
Yes, they should. And, in fact, under the law and under requirements now, they are checked out. The question is, as will always be the question, right, wrong, or indifferent, I'm choosing to be very, very open-minded. It depends on who is doing that vetting and doing that checking. I find it hard to find a lot of confidence that the agents in charge, and I'm not talking about the career FBI, career intelligence people, career State Department people that are responsible with doing this necessarily. I'm talking about their superiors right up to the politically appointed superiors. Except for maybe Director Comey, I've been very impressed with him and with the FBI, that he's intent on doing the right job. But some of the others, they are political appointees that have the same philosophy as this president, and I think that philosophy has had a total disregard for the safety and security of this country and recognizing that America must be treated first in the proper way before we treat anyone else in the proper way. And so I guess my answer to you is, the provisions are in place, the requirements are in place for doing proper vetting, including if you are a homegrown terrorist and you go over somewhere and you come back. We have regulations and legislation in place to handle that. The question is, will they be carried out?
So you're saying that if I have no criminal background, no evidence whatsoever of leaning toward terrorism, and I just decide to go over to Saudi Arabia, for example, hang out for a few weeks and come back, I will be looked at closely?
No, not necessarily you. If you have no criminal rating, there's no indication because, number one...
But that's the problem. I want to be looked at closely.
They're not checking into that.
They should be.
You will be noted that you have come back from there. But it's just like me when I was in Saudi Arabia last year. Sure, I'm a member of Congress. I was over there as part of a congressional delegation, and that was one stopover in our trip. They have all the records that I was there. They have my passport, the visa, all that went with that, like any other citizen, even though mine was diplomatic. But it is noted. It's in my history.
Would they look at Keith Ellison the same way? Just ask. I know, that's a little profiling. I shouldn't have called. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I guess it's just my opinion that I'm not talking about Congressman Tim Walberg, but Brandon Drake, kind of a nobody. I suddenly go to one of these countries. I would hope that the NSA, FBI, everybody would be in the loop on checking me out. And if they don't have the resources to do that, then they should have the resources to do that. In today's world, I'm so sick of there's no background on me to indicate that I'm a threat, so I can go anywhere I want, come back, and after I do something, then I get checked out.
Yeah, but I push back with you a little, and Walberg is known as the plain-talking Tim Walberg. I'm not gonna lie to you. But I would bet a few months back or a couple years back when the whole issue of Patriot Act, NSA screening and all that you probably were pushing back against some of that.
No. No, I was for it. I'm on the record for that.
Yeah.
Gary will attest to that.
Yeah,
I'm for empowering the NSA. I'm for, in today's world, I'm going to pick my poison with the government than allowing.
Closer together than not. However, there is that very fine line of civil liberties that comes with some insecurity, maybe not called insecurity, but some risk in order to make sure that you and Gary and myself and our families are there's care given to know a little bit about what we're doing, but we don't step over the line. And just because you went to Saudi Arabia and you've shown no indication, you've been law-abiding, that all of a sudden we start snooping into every area of your life.
Well, then we have the San Bernardino situation. This guy goes over there. He had no criminal background that was detected, and he of course marries this woman. And that I know I'm kind of it's kind of a different situation. But he was an American citizen that did this.
We had more on that. We had more on him. We had Facebook entries. We had posts that were going on that were showing there was a radicalization taking place between those two individuals.
Okay, but still that wasn't checked out beforehand. My point is this. The guy goes over there. That should have triggered it right away. You go into his Facebook. You check him out. I don't care if he's an American citizen. You check all that out. So what you're noting is even that wasn't checked out, his Facebook postings beforehand. Yeah. But they should have been because he went there. That should have triggered it.
Yeah, but there was checking out. That's my concern. There was some checking going on.
But they didn't do anything about it?
And they didn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying is we have provisions in place that would get most of this, but it's the entities at the top that are making the decisions on how much is used, and that's my concern.
I don't know. Homeland Security, I think they were quoted as saying they didn't check out his wife's Facebook, for example, and she's not an American citizen at that point in time when she was in Pakistan. And because there was no reason to check it out, they said. There's just no reason. But you don't know if there's a reason until you check it out.
Well, I would say there is because, if Brandon Drake goes,
I say there is, too.
Yeah, if Brandon Drake goes to Saudi Arabia, you're Brandon Drake. If a Muslim, I'm sorry if I'm going to profile, goes to Saudi Arabia and Pakistan and brings back
even
a
more
wife,
reason.
They should have been looked at very, very
but
closely.
I'm saying even if you're not a Muslim, maybe you secretly are a Muslim, but even if you're not and you go to these places, who's to say that you're not going to come back and create havoc? All it takes is one. All it takes is two. And, of course, we're letting thousands of these people come in from overseas, but and all it takes is a handful or one or two.
Yeah.
But I'm saying even in this in today's world, if you have if you're Congressman Tim Walberg and you're going there, you have a reason. If you're in the military and you're going to be stationed in Qatar, for example, you have a reason. But if you just pack your bags and go over there because you're on this, you know, I'm going to discover myself type thing, you should be checked out. I'll bet you anything that the Russians, they'll check their people out because they know better.
Yeah, they might. They might. Yeah, you're more hardcore than I am, even. But
I'm not saying we should be like a dictatorship like Putin. But I'm saying let's use some common sense. And when Donald Trump comes out, and I don't even know if I'm going to vote for Donald Trump necessarily right now. I probably will. But when he comes out and speaks in this clear language, this common sense language, I resonate with that. And I think a majority, the silent majority, I'm going to keep saying, are resonating with that.
I think so, too.
Let's cut the PC crap out totally.
Yeah. Well, Brandon, I hear you. But, again, that's why I say Brandon, vote wisely, grasshopper.
Yeah. I'm saying check me out. You know, if a cop pulls me over because I'm in some neighborhood that, you know, and I have been pulled over. The place I used to work at, I think I've talked about this on the air, I used to go into this apartment complex to read at my lunch break because there was really no other quiet place to go. And some people that lived in that apartment complex saw my car sitting. I tried to park away from everybody as much as I could. But they saw it just looked odd. There's a car parked there. Who is this guy? There's been some criminal activity in the apartment complex, some drug activity. Cops pulled me over. And you know what I said to the cops? I didn't yell and scream at him and said, "Hey, what are you harassing me for?" No, I said, "Thank you. You're doing your job."
Yeah, well, that
I love it,
and that is important. But I think we also never forget the freedom that we enjoy in this country. There is that risk that we've got to take a fine line issue. We're doing things now more than we used to do, or even allow ourselves to be doing. But let's approach it cautiously. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to another subject, Tim, that I know that you wanted to get
to. Well, I appreciate your candor, Tim.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, let's talk Obama's executive gun control. Now, this next year, we've got 1 year left of Mr. Obama, and I've got to assume that we are going to see a lot more of this, because he's got nothing to lose, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So is there anything the House of Representatives, either with the Senate or not, can do to slow down, stop any of these executive actions? And we as citizens, I mean, how, if it's not a real law, if it's just an executive order, do I have to follow that law or that rule?
I would tell you, for instance, give you an example. If you go into your doctor's office and that doctor says to you, do you have any guns? Your response, as my response would be, thanks for asking, but it's none of your damn business.
Okay.
Or, are you talking about my caulking gun or my solder gun? I mean, bottom line, you do not have to respond to that. And I don't think most doctors are going to be asking that because they don't want to be sued by reporting that.
It was on the last time I had went last year to a doctor for my yearly physical.
Sure.
It was on there. I had a little questionnaire.
But that's Obamacare.
Yeah, and I did nothing. I didn't touch it. Yeah. I didn't answer it. I left it blank. I was like, you know what, you dirty buggers, you're already trying.
And I've talked to doctors about that, and they could care less if you fill that out. But that's on Obamacare. But so that's what he wants to do still further. The issue is not, as you and I both know, and we're talking the choir here, but the issue isn't guns. I have plenty of guns, and I'm not worried about them being in the house alone with my wife when I'm gone, that one will shoot her. It comes from illegal action, an individual using it. And those of us that have weapons that are legal in our homes, we've taken CPL licensing requirements seriously. We have concealed carry. We're legal. We're not going to hurt anybody. The issue comes down to mental health issue, and both the president and vice president have said, when pushed, why don't we work together on mental health concerns? The House has a wonderful bill that's working its way through House Energy and Commerce Committee right now. My good friend from Pennsylvania, Navy captain, has this bill. He's a psychologist as well. And it's moving, but the Democrats are pushing it back against. He said to the president, the vice president, why don't we join together on this, getting this through, where we can deal with mental health concerns and deal with it in a legal way that doesn't put people at risk for the rest of their life. There is no problem of not having their Second Amendment liberties availed to them. And the president and vice president both said that's not our issue right now. Our issue is gun control and getting control of the guns that are hurting people's lives. None of those, you know, none of those events that have taken place in our country since 2012, right up to the most recent one in San Bernardino, none of those would have been impacted any way, shape, or form by background checks or any of the other proposals that the president is putting out now in his executive orders. Not a single one of them. And that's why, again, I think Congress will step in. We've already got bills that I've signed on to that push back on these executive orders. We have the power of the purse coming up through the legislative process to remove funding from any entity, agent, or department that would be put in place to carry out this executive orders. And then ultimately we have the courts. And I think the courts so far in Second Amendment liberties have been 100% right up to the U.S. Supreme Court. So this president right now, I think, threw this sucker out last week in order to keep our attention off of the reconciliation bill that was put on his desk to force him for the first time to have to sign or veto the defunding of Planned Parenthood and the repealing of Obamacare. Pure and simple, I think that's why he played this country like a violin by throwing the executive order out on gun control that really took our focus off and talking about what the House and Senate finally accomplished living up to what the people of the United States, in putting us in a majority this last election cycle, wanted us to do, and we did it. Maybe I'm being too
I'd agree with you, Tim, because you know what? I have been watching the news, and I have not seen anything about him vetoing that hardly. I mean, it's not even making ABC, CBS News,
or even Fox.
Yeah. Very strange. Hey, Tim, let's take a call from Joe. He's got a question. I think it's Joe from Wyandotte, probably. Derek, you got that? Put Joe on real quick. Make it quick, Joe, so we can keep getting through here.
Afternoon, Congressman Wahlberg.
Hi, Joe.
I've heard that the executive orders had some type of a clause, whereas if you are a Social Security recipient and you do not have total control, or you have to have a some type of fiduciary agent to do your finances for you, that you, if you own any firearms, will have to relinquish that or actually relinquish your Social Security. Is that a true fact?
No, not completely, but there will be a reporting requirement and then an investigation as to whether you are capable, mentally capable, of controlling your Second Amendment liberties and thus having guns. And that is sinister. That is scary.
That's
something indeed that we will push back and have pushed back against already, and you'll be hearing more about it if the media cares to comment on it. But this is what this is actually doing.
I want my gun, Nurse Ratchet.
What this is actually doing is violating our Fifth Amendment rights. It's you having information on us, personal information that will incriminate us. That is not legal to be given unless we're doing it ourselves. So, those are some of the sinister things where you look at mental health issues as well as age issues with Social Security. And just because I'm old doesn't mean I can't handle a firearm appropriately or protect myself or my family against the abusive use of that. This is the camel's nose under the tent type thing. And some people will be sucked in by saying, well, grandma or grandpa, they're really not of full mind anymore, and so, my gracious, we shouldn't let them have a gun or be involved with guns. Now, wait a second. If they haven't done anything illegal with it and done anything wrong yet, maybe the family ought to watch them. Maybe they ought to have discussions with their seniors in the family. But should the government come in just because you're in Social Security? No way, no how. So.
Yeah. Well, great, Joe. Appreciate that question. It's a great question. So, Tim, let me ask you something else. I'm going to put you on the spot here. So Looking at a Republican candidate, do you want to say who you are supporting at this point or not? Because I kind of get the feeling that you're not a Trump supporter.
I haven't endorsed anyone yet. Most recent candidate to call me was Bush. His campaign manager, for the second time, called to check and see if I'd change my mind about endorsing anybody yet. And no, I haven't. I haven't. I think it's still early. I think we want to see some rollout subsequent to the Iowa caucuses. I think we need to see a few more at the bottom of the pile drop out. I'm delighted to see Lindsey Graham drop out. It was about time. He never should have been in. But there should be some others, good people, but nonetheless, I don't think they're ready for prime time, and they should be out.
Yeah, I'm assuming after Iowa, you'll see a falling out. And frankly, I know Bush has got a big, fat bank account, but I don't think he's going to do well in Iowa. And I think old Jeb is probably going to be on the way out. I really do.
I don't think he will either. Then there are other people. I really appreciated Carly Fiorina, but she's not getting any purchase. Margaret Thatcher in England, along with Reagan, my gracious, what a time in history those two had. I think Rubio has some excellent foreign policy experience, but he's a young guy. Senator Cruz is a vibrant guy. He and I have had some falling out at times on issues, and I'll leave that between the two of us, but I certainly could support him. You know, I've made the statement that whoever comes out of the primary and becomes our nominee, I will support, and that includes Trump.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that because, you know, when I hear like Bill Kristol and some of these other guys saying, you know, if Trump or Cruz come out on top, that the Republican Party will be ruined. Now, I know Trump does not have a conservative record, and frankly, he's probably as moderate as what we sometimes blame Bush for being a moderate. But again, he's hitting those issues that, you know, across the board, whether it's independents, liberals, Reagan Democrats, I've even had some Democrats tell me that they would go for a Trump because they certainly don't want to go Bernie Sanders, and they believe that Hillary Clinton is a liar who should probably be indicted. Which
the most recent poll in Michigan showed that the home of the Reagan Democrat in Candace Miller's district, 48% of the people would support Trump. I think that proves that there will be Democrats that will support Trump. The question is, when you get down ultimately to the final four or five candidates, and you're looking at independents, you're looking at millennials, which they're a specific group, and they think differently than a lot of the rest of us. Will they be supportive of Trump?
Yeah.
Or will they be supportive of any of the other candidates, Cruz, et cetera? That's something we have to determine through the process. So I'm not trying to hedge, but I literally have not picked anybody yet.
Okay, great. Well, Tim, thank you so much for spending an hour with us. Brandon, do you have anything else you wanted to...
I was going
to
say, Congressman Tim, did you send Kim Jong-un a birthday greeting yesterday?
No, I didn't.
No? Okay.
I don't plan to.
Tim, thank you so much for everything and coming on for the hour and clarifying a bunch of stuff for us. So I really appreciate it, and you are always welcome to come back and spend more time with us.
We'll look forward to the next time.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. All right, until next week, go to thedailydrift.com and get on the Facebook and the social media and talk us up.
Next week, we celebrate with a flight lice.
See you next week.